Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a Kesler's family production. In this episode, we are going to talk about disruption in law, legal issues in sports, and the Tom Brady fan club. Our guest today is Michael Elkins, a labor law attorney for Bryant Miller Olive and the co-host of Sports Talk Podcast with Jeff and Mike. Mike lives in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and is a huge New England Patriots fan. Mike is a progressive-minded attorney that is focused on providing the best possible outcome for his clients. He works closely with corporate clients to quickly resolve employee-related disputes and dispose of pending claims efficiently. Mike brings perspective of an attorney who understands the intricacies of employment law, and his expertise will undoubtedly help any business owner. With a great amount of knowledge of the law as well as sports, we are thrilled to have Mike on the podcast. Let's get into it. Mike, welcome to the Entrepreneur Perspectives podcast. It's great to have you.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we're going to get started with 10 questions requiring a more thoughtful response and end with 10 rapid fire questions. And with you being a big sports nut like myself, if we get on some tangents about sports, let's just let it go.
Absolutely.
And your dog's joined us today, I see.
And she's very excited to be here as well. Say hi, Mackenzie.
There we go. Like, as many guests as we can get on the show, the better. So it just makes us look better. Anyway, yeah, all right, let's get into it. So you heard the intro about yourself, but of course we can't do you justice in one opening statement. So tell us something real about you that the audience doesn't know.
I think it would have to be, you know, being a trial lawyer and a litigator and constantly appearing in either, you know, in front of juries or in arbitrations. It seems so fluid when you're doing it, at least to the observer, but there's actually a lot of fear that goes into that. No matter how long I've been doing this, which is about 17 years, there's still fear every time. That's probably as real as I think it gets for me. You know, that fear drives you in presenting a case, appearing before judges, and it's not something that gets really exposed very often.
Is this fear lead to stress?
I wouldn't say that it's stress. I would say that it's almost like nervous anticipation. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, fear of, you want to do everything right. It's kind of like, I guess, you know, preparation. If you're thinking in a sports context, you know, you've got to prep the week before for the next team. So you got to watch as much film as you can. You got to get the practices in, learn the game plan, same kind of concept. And you do that because you don't want to miss anything. And people often don't get to hear about that or don't see that. So when you ask, you know, something real, that's, I think, pretty real.
Yeah. And so people just see the game, or they just see your you at the event, right?
Sure.
They don't see the lead up. However, I would imagine a lot of this is second nature for you. You know, practice, preparation, all of that just is a part of your life at this point.
And absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, they might see you, you know, pull out the right information on cross-examination and your client's super thrilled and you get a great decision. But what they don't see is all the time that was spent in the conference room at 3 a.m. digging through everything to get to that one question or to get to that point. So just a little behind the scenes on some of that.
Yeah. So how do you do it? How do you handle a 3 a.m. type, you know, evening or morning, we should say.
Yeah.
And also be on your game. Is this coffee? Is exercise? Like, what's going on to make sure that you can stay on your game?
It's a combination, I think, of exercise and coffee. I compete as an Olympic weightlifter in the masters category. So I'm constantly training. And I think that training helps with endurance and ability to withstand some of that stuff. And I drink a lot of coffee if I'm in that situation.
Yeah. So basically you just told everybody that you're not to be messed with. You're a litigation lawyer and you're a weightlifting champion. So, okay.
not a champion.
There you go.
but I can lift.
This is going to be a very kind episode, I think. We're going to be very nice to Mike.
There you go.
All right, so obviously we know that you are spending a lot of time, you know, practicing your craft as an attorney. And so in your day-to-day work at Bryant Miller Olive, what is your focus and your ultimate goal for the business and then yourself?
I mean, day-to-day, the focus is always results-driven. What's going to be best for the client in the end? And sometimes that doesn't gel with what I might personally want. Sometimes you want to go into the courtroom and just crush people, but maybe that's not in the client's financial best interest, or maybe the facts and the law don't quite line up. So day to day, it's always about the goals of the client. I think in terms of ultimate goal for the business, it's really further growth and making sure not to lag behind what's happening in the world, staying relevant. That's really the best way to put it. You know, the legal industry is sort of known for not staying very relevant. So I try to keep abreast of what's happening in terms of marketing, social media, and make sure that, you know, I'm out there in the front of that.
Okay. And then yourself, how long have you been practicing law?
Right. I've been practicing almost 17 years now. So my goals for myself are really to keep handling unique and interesting cases. And luckily in the area of labor law and labor and employment law, I get everything's interesting all the time. It's different every day. You know, a lot of the stuff you're seeing in the news with the NFL and arbitrations and domestic violence, I handle those types of cases exactly. Not for the NFL, but in the context of police and fire unions and cities and municipalities, it's always different. And so for me, it's just to continue to really have interesting stuff that I can get excited about personally.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky to have that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we talk a lot about what has you excited today, and it's amazing the things that you can do when you are excited about the work that you're involved with or the clients Absolutely. That you're helping out.
Absolutely. And I tell my clients all the time, particularly my municipal clients, the governments, that you know, this is, for me, this is the best area of the law. I love it. It's ever changing, and it's always interesting, and it's fun. So And that makes it very easy.
Yeah. Well, you obviously are passionate about your work, but I would imagine if we remove all that you do as an attorney, you have your own passions. Obviously, we already know that you're into weightlifting and all that, but what is your passion in your personal life?
Oh, it's definitely sports. I mean, other than the dog, because she's standing right here, but other than my dog, it's definitely sports. No question about it. I've been into sports since I was a kid, I think. And so whether it's on the analytics side or just fandom or following teams and analyzing issues, I think it's one of the best things we have. It's unscripted drama. I think it's better than a movie. It's better than a play, because in movies and plays, you know, it's not real. And sports is real. And you can't get that kind of dramatic event in anything else. I mean, just look at the Super Bowl last year. How could there be anything better than that?
Well, so I'm assuming you were a Patriots fan over there, right?
Well, right.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you.
But from a dramatic standpoint, absolutely. I mean, if you watched that, it sort of played out like it could have been a tragedy, right? I mean, the end of an era, and, you know, the quarterback, you know, gets blown out, and then all of a sudden the tables turn and you have this almost surprise ending. I just think, and you could use any example, Golden State, Cleveland, 2 years ago when the Cavaliers came back. I mean, that was incredible drama. Red Sox, Yankees in 2004. Any of those types of events. I think sports is unique in that way.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, that's how we connected, and we'll get into that. But it's amazing when you have a business that you love, and then you can enjoy something that's bigger than you. But it matters because it doesn't matter, right? Sports.
Sure.
You know, you're dealing, you know, as we record this, you are in South Florida, and Hurricane Irma is making its way to the southern, you know, to South Florida. And, you know, that's important, right? That's the things that, you know, we as a country worry about. And these are real things, but that's where sports comes into play. You know, sports is a distraction for a lot of this stuff. And as you just told me right before we started recording this, the first game of the season for the Dolphins and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers has been canceled, and but being played week 11 now during their bye week. So, right. You know, sports is like I said before, it matters because it doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah. But I think you can see, like, in history where sports can be a unifying event. I mean, look at, you know, President Bush after 9/11 walking out into Yankee Stadium to throw that first pitch. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, did that change the world? No. But that was really something impressive, and I think something that Americans latched onto at that moment. Or you look at J.J. Watt with all the money he's raised for the victims of Hurricane Harvey. So I think the games sometimes don't matter as much, but the idea of unifying in a common arena, whether it's baseball or football, and rooting for teams and coming together, I think is another aspect that makes sports really great, particularly in the times that we have now.
Well said. Well said. So originally you are from?
I'm originally from Rhode Island.
Okay.
And so Cranston, Rhode Island.
Okay. And then you grew up a Patriots fan, I'm assuming Red Sox, Celtics.
Yeah, when I grew up, I rooted for Champagne Tony Eason, Patriots quarterback for a while.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad used to take me to the old, it was called Sullivan Stadium, I think, at the time. And you used to be able to get free tickets. He would take me to Burger King or McDonald's and get a Happy Meal, and you get two Patriots tickets. I mean, they couldn't give them away. I mean, that's how bad they were.
That's amazing.
And I, obviously Red Sox, Celtics, and Bruins, but when I was a kid, the only thing we had was the Celtics. I mean, everybody else was terrible.
Yeah.
So, it's ingrained. It's in my blood to be a New England fan.
I get it. Well, and things have changed so much over the last 10 years. I mean, the run that Boston sports has had is unreal. I was at the airport in Boston three years ago. And as I was going through the security check, I look up and they have all the championship banners, which obviously includes all the ones like from the Celtics, but then like the Bruins, the Red Sox, who, you know, they were never going to win a championship. And then the Patriots, like you say, when I was in the 90s, you know, the Bills used to play the Patriots. They're like, well, it should be an easy win. And
sure.
It's completely flip-flopped. So,
and it's remarkable when you look at particularly the Patriots, who went from arguably one of the worst franchises in American sports, not just in the NFL, but in America. I mean, they were one signature away from being the St. Louis Stallions, and they went from awful to in every respect, marketing and business, on the field, everything, to what you have now. I mean, if anyone says they saw that coming, I think they're lying.
Yeah.
But it's remarkable where they came from to where they are now.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing, though, too, like one signature away from becoming the St. Louis Stallions. Like that's remarkable. And, you know, we see that in business all the time, right? We see just things almost happen. You know, there's companies almost go out of business. They almost never even started the business. Something almost never happened. And then it does happen. And it leads to something remarkable like you're talking about. The Patriots being one of the most valuable franchises and now one of the most successful franchises. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
and I lived through that when they almost left. And, you know, that was a crazy time.
And that makes it all the better, right?
Absolutely. Oh, most definitely. Yeah. It never gets old. I'll say that.
Well, I'd say as a Buffalo sports fan, you know, the time, if I don't know if it'll ever happen right now. I think the Sabres are ahead of the Bills. But if they ever do have a parade, it will, you know, it'll be like, or if not more than what Cleveland just went through when the Cavs won their championship.
And you know, Buffalo is such a great sports town. I've been to Buffalo numerous times, and I've got some good friends that are diehard, you know, Bills Mafia.
Yeah.
and I do think Buffalo deserves a really great NFL franchise. I mean, the Bills are great, but it's been so bad for so long. And I think football's better when the Bills are relevant and better.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're a team people like to root for, at least now, because when team people love the lovable loser. But, you know, you're right. I mean, do they deserve it? Yeah, I think you're right. But at the same point, you have to earn it, right? That's the same
Absolutely.
Thing in business. I mean, there's a lot of people we know that deserve things, but you have to go out there and make it happen. And until they do, they are what they are.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
So talking a lot about, you know, business, these sports organizations that we're talking about, they are a business. But in our company, we talk a lot about protecting business, you know, and from insurance, protecting a business, to staying relevant, to creating content. At the end of the day, it all has to do with setting your business up properly and protecting that business against legal issues, let's say, which begs the question, do you think as a, you know, labor attorney, do you think companies are protecting themselves properly when it comes to labor law?
I think it's 50-50. If you had asked me this question 2 years ago, I probably would have said no way. But over the last 2 years, I've been getting more clients coming to me proactively, not the majority, but more. But let's face it, if clients were protecting themselves, I would have less work. So a lot of times I get called in because something went haywire. And, you know, one of my first questions might be, well, let's see your handbook. Let's see your policies. And none of those things exist. And then we have to have the heart-to-heart about why that stuff's important. So I think there's still a large group of businesses out there that are so focused on, you know, pushing content and being relevant and building their business as they should be that the compliance on the employment side sort of gets left pushed away. And I think some of that stems from the fact that your employees are a huge part of your culture and your capital and your ability to grow. And so you don't really want to think of them as a possible lawsuit, or, you know, that they're going to hurt you one day. But the reality is, if you are doing well in business, you're going to get sued eventually by an employee. So you have to be prepared.
Yeah. So are you going out to a lot of businesses on the front end to help them be proactive, to set up, like you said, their employee handbook and their contracts and all that?
Usually it stems from a minor incident and I get a phone call or a referral and they'll tell me what's happening. And it's something we can, you know, put the fire out. And then we have the frank conversation about, well, if this had been bigger, here's where your blind spots are. So we go ahead and then we are able to get them set up. It doesn't usually happen, you'd say organically, where they just say, oh, we need to make sure we're protected. It's usually after something happens. And we hope that it's something small that can be dealt with immediately. Because there really are some things that if you don't have in your handbook or you don't have a policy on, you can waive a lot of defenses in certain lawsuits. I mean, you can really, really be at a disadvantage as an employer. So it's important that you get those things taken care of as soon as possible.
Yeah. So you're out there looking for the exposures in these businesses, but at the same, on the flip side too, you know, there's exposures in a lot of different industries. We call it, you know, disruption in business. You know, the insurance industry, accounting, legal, obviously are all industries being disrupted at a rapid pace. Being an attorney yourself, like, what type of disruption do you see in the legal world?
It's definitely a change in the model. You know, traditionally, from the beginning of time, even until now, the law firm model has been there's partners and then there's associates, right? And the partners bring in the business and the associates do some of the work and the partners interface with the clients. And you know, as an associate, you sit in your office 13 hours a day and don't leave and just work. And I think that model is antiquated and is currently being disrupted. There's some really interesting firms that are taking, you know, pretty big time partners from large firms and putting them together in a firm that has no brick and mortar. You know, there are no offices. Everybody's working remotely. So I think in terms of the model itself, it's ripe to change, because why would a company, or why should a company pay for an associate and a paralegal and a partner when they can get it all from one or two people? And that's one of the things I love about the firm I'm at. We're sort of a hybrid of the changing culture and a little bit of how it used to be. You know, I do most of my work, but when there's overflow, we will use associates, but those associates are usually right there with us. We don't double bill, we don't overbill files, and we are pretty good about, you know, smaller offices using technology. So I think the disruption's in the model.
No, and I think that's great, like you said, about your current firm, where you're using the tried and true methods, but you're also being progressive in the way you're doing things. And I think that's smart. You know, at the same time, you know, meeting someone, shaking their hands, you know, talking about just the soft skills that, you know, in business, those things are still playing out. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, we don't need that anymore because we can just, like you and I, communicate on Skype. Yeah, but at the same point, like, you need to be able to carry a conversation. You need to be able to do business the tried and true way, but
that's right,
but be progressive about it, which is what obviously you guys are doing at your firm.
Yeah, and I mean, I know law firms, they were always big on, or traditional firms were, by an example, are big on meetings, lots of meetings. Let's have a meeting to talk about this. And, you know, my firm, who is run by some more traditional attorneys, you know, I went to them, I said, guys, too many meetings, and we've been able to cut those things down. So they see the value in efficiency, technology, but at the same time, we still get together every year. We make sure, like you said, that we're shaking hands and talking to people and being able to socialize as well. I think it's all important.
Do you think law firms nationally, I mean, obviously this is very generally speaking, but do you think law firms are managing the disruption well, or is it still too early in the game for many firms to go and be progressive?
I think it's a little early. I think lawyers generally, at least some of the earlier generation, are still very resistant to change. And that's pretty common, I think, with people. People don't like change as a general rule. So I think there's resistance, but I am seeing it coming around. I'm looking at law firms now, at least on LinkedIn, some of the more national firms are very proactive in pushing content. You can see websites are changing almost daily, and they're getting a lot more user-friendly, a lot more progressive. So you're seeing some change, but I think that there's still some resistance from some of the old guard out there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so when you're out there meeting with different people or meeting different or coming in contact with new customers, new clients, new connections, you know, one of the ways we met was actually on Anchor. And I think a lot of the people listening to this podcast might not know what Anchor is. So first, like really that for those that don't know the app Anchor, what is Anchor to you? And then, you know, how do you see it working?
I think Anchor is really a great way to provide shorter audio content on whatever it is that you're interested in. That's why I got on it, was to, you know, I do my own podcast with my buddy for sports, but I wanted to put out some content and sort of tie sports into labor law, which, you know, we're seeing constantly is a big issue. And Anchor was a great medium to do that. You can record it on your cell phone. It provides you all the effects that I think you need for a shorter kind of audio post. And I think it's a cool little community of people that are doing the same thing.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is I think you can get with audio. Obviously we're big into audio, just like you are. You have your own podcast. You know, we have our own podcast, but having a phone conversation, listening to someone talk on the radio or on a podcast, you get this tone, you get the inflection of what the person's talking about. You get to see if they know what they're talking about. And I think that plays itself out very well. I love writing, I love reading, but sometimes you don't know the tone of the author. You know, what did the email mean? What were they saying in the book? I wish they could be here to talk to me about it. And I think that played itself out. You know, when I first heard you on Anchor, it was just, you showed up in, you know, I don't know what they call it, when that thing that scrolls, it's sports and labor law. Of course, I want to check that out. We love talking about those types of things. And the first thing I heard was you comparing a Bill Belichick press conference. And understand, I'm not a Belichick fan. I can respect his work and what he does. But you compared it to giving a deposition the right way. And I was like, oh, man, this guy gets it. I love it. So elaborate and tell that story about Bill Belichick and the deposition.
Yeah. So I listen. I'm a Patriots nerd, I guess, or maybe just a sports nerd. And so I listen to all of Belichick's press conferences. Whenever they're scheduled, they get a little notification on my phone that says Belichick speaking in 5 minutes. And I think they're great. A lot of people don't like them because he doesn't answer a lot of questions with a lot of words. He's very direct. And so he was asked at a training camp press conference, Bill, the question was, Bill, is training camp a good time for a player to get conditioned? And his answer was no, which was perfect.
Right.
And then the follow-up was, well, when is a good time for the player to get conditioned? His answer was the offseason. So he gave a three-word answer to two questions, and that is the perfect deponent in my world. I tell a lot of my clients, if I'm prepping them for a deposition, look, less is more. Don't tell your story. Answer the question that is asked of you. So the example I always give is, if someone asks you, did you have breakfast this morning? Your answer is yes, not yes, I had bacon and eggs and oatmeal, because they didn't ask you what you had. They only asked you, did you have breakfast? Put it on the other person to ask the right follow-up. And Belichick is the master at that. I mean, he did it again the other day with the Jacoby Brissett trade. Someone asked him, Bill, what was the purpose of the Jacoby Brissett trade? And his answer was to acquire Philip Dorsett, period.
That's it.
I mean, that's it. And I just was laughing because he would be the perfect client for a deposition. So I thought that was just fun.
Yeah,
to
talk about. Amazing. Well, I think it's cool that, you know, so many people, you want to follow into what everyone else is saying. Belichick this and Belichick's the worst person to talk to. But you go out there and you find why Bill Belichick is so good and how it relates to your world. And I think that's just so cool that you can pull that little piece of it out, where everyone else is like, no, I don't like this guy. You're like, no, this guy's he's like a wizard. He's over here. He's just doing it the right. He's doing it a different. He's very unique. I think that's great.
Yeah, it was a fun little anchor post to do.
Every time I listen to Bill Belichick now, I'm just thinking through that. Like, wow, this guy would be impossible to break on the stand, right?
I think you'd have to ask the right follow-up questions, and he'll answer them, but he gives nothing more than what is asked. And that's what makes him so great as a deponent anyway. Maybe not in a press conference, but as a deponent.
That's right. So now we're in the world of sports. There's a lot going on, and we want to talk about some legal issues that are out there. But first, I want to talk about the collective bargaining agreement in sports. That word is tossed around all the time, CBA, and it's confusing, right? So as a labor attorney, can you explain the collective bargaining agreements in sports so the average person can understand it, and then maybe put it into the perspective of maybe everyday small business, if you could?
Absolutely. So the collective bargaining agreement occurs only when you have a unionized workforce, right? So if there's no union, then employees are subject to the policies of the employer, whatever the employer wants to set. But when there's a union, the parties have to come together, the management, the employer, and the employees, and they form what's called a contract that sets most of the terms. That contract is the collective bargaining agreement. It's the agreement between management and the rank and file employees as to the rules of the game, the rules of employment. It doesn't cover everything, but it usually covers just about everything. There are some issues that will be left to the discretion of management, but for the most part, it really takes care of everything for the employees and for management, who can do what, when, how discipline will be handled, what issues in discipline can be challenged, all those types of things. So it's pretty complicated stuff, and it exists in all sorts of areas of employment. Typically, police and fire all have unions. That's in the public sector. But in the private sector, you'll see warehouse workers unionized or truck drivers unionized. It just depends. So that's why you hear about the collective bargaining agreement in all of these sports leagues, because the players are unionized and they're trying to set beneficial rules for the game. No pun intended.
Right. Okay, got it. Now, how does that, obviously we're not dealing with unions, right, where we are, and a lot of people aren't dealing with unions in their business, but they are having agreements with their employees that they're going to behave a certain way, do certain things, right, hit certain sales goals,
sure,
or all that type of stuff. So again, it's not a CBA per se, but there's agreements in place between employers and employees. How do you relate the two?
Well, the collective bargaining agreement situation is significantly more restrictive on the employer. Now, remember, I'm a management lawyer, so I've been representing employers for 17 years. So I do everything I say sort of comes, I guess, with a tinge of bias towards the management side.
Yep.
You know, if you ask my friends who are the union attorneys who I go up against, they'll tell you, no, it equals the playing field. But I think it sort of makes things a little bit more restrictive for management. For example, if you want to change certain things and you're a private employer and there's no union, you know, you want to start changing hours, you want to move people around, you want to reorganize, you can do that. And the employees can either deal with it or they can move on. But in the collective bargaining context, you can't just start making these sort of broad-based changes, depending on your bargaining agreement, of course. But for the most part, you're going to have to talk to the union about some things. Or said another way, the union's going to say, you need to talk to us about that before you do it. And then you might argue over that a little bit. So
yeah,
they're really very different scenarios.
But what it can do is, as a small business owner or an entrepreneur, you can understand the freedom and flexibility you have because you don't work in that type of environment where a lot of, you know, big organizations or companies do. So the smaller companies can be more nimble and you can have more freedom to get things done, to make changes. Go ahead.
And that's a great point. And I think it illustrates the need for companies to be mindful of culture and be mindful of what their employees are doing, because, you know, happy employees usually are comfortable with their situation. Unhappy employees might not feel the same way, and they may seek to change their situation by grouping together and attempting to unionize, which is, we could do a whole other talk on that.
Yeah.
So stay away from that. But
yep.
But it's just important, employers, to be mindful of your culture.
Absolutely. Yeah, we talk about culture all the time. It's something I think about. We just had an article released within the last couple of weeks, and it was so on top of my mind, culture, that had to just talk about it. And we talked to other business owners about it. And, you know, compared it to sports, right? All the teams, you look at the Patriots or, you know, any of these teams that have done well, culture always rises to the top, right? Talent is obviously important. If you're the Golden State Warriors aren't winning just because of their culture. However, the culture is what, and the winning, and you can, there's a lot of arguments we can make about Kevin Durant and why he went there, but culture was a major reason why that team is what they are, why Kevin Durant even decided to go there in the first place. So culture is obviously a big deal, and you know, with talent and you bring in culture with it, there's a lot of good things that could happen.
No question about it. One of the most important things, for sure.
Yeah. So as we talked about the CBA, we talk about employees. I want to talk a little bit about legal issues between one of your favorites, Tom Brady, in the NFL.
Sure.
And that's over and it passed. And at the end of the day, I think it was kind of, I'm not a Brady fan, I'm not a Patriot fan, but at the same time, he got back at the NFL. Whether they cheated or not, I don't know. You know, I think more of the question is, that whole thing that went down, the legal issue between Brady and the NFL, what was your take on it? Removing your bias, of course, and more on the legal side of things.
Yeah, actually, yeah, and taking my bias out of it, as both a management lawyer and as a Brady fan, and those are really two conflicting biases
right.
when it comes to Deflategate. Look, ultimately, I think that the Second Circuit Court of Appeals got it right. I thought the judge, I think it was Judge Brennan, when he initially vacated the suspension, I predicted that it would be upheld on appeal and that the judge would be reversed and that the suspension would be upheld. Look, Deflategate was not at all about whether Tom Brady and the New England Patriots engaged in some scheme to deflate footballs. That it was never about that. It was about the power of the arbitrator, in this case, Roger Goodell, to conduct a hearing, to weigh evidence and weigh facts, and that his weighing of the facts and his version of what happened, as long as the process was fair, will not be disturbed on appeal. That's what Deflategate really was. Once it passed into the district court and got into the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, there was no legal issue about whether Brady did it or not. In fact, if you read the Second Circuit's decision, all 38 pages of it, they make very clear they are not commenting on factually whether they think Brady engaged in the conduct for which Goodell punished him. They simply are saying, look, you union gave power to the commissioner through Article 46, and under traditional what we call arbitration principles, it's very hard to disturb an arbitrator's ruling. And I deal with that every day. Courts just don't like to do it, primarily because they weren't in the room when the hearing happened. So they couldn't see the witnesses, they didn't hear the witnesses, they didn't see their tone, their body language, their inflection when they testified. So they're going to leave factual determinations alone, whether they agree with them or not. And that's what Deflategate was really about.
That's interesting, because the media, right, and everybody who's the water cooler talking about it didn't really take it there. But when you really uncover things, like you said, and you actually read the ruling, there's more to it than what everyone was assuming.
Yeah. Oh, tons more.
Always, I mean, right?
and the union's argument in Deflategate is basically the same thing that they're arguing in the Ezekiel Elliott case. Now, they're trying it a little differently. They've dressed it up different, but it's the same thing, which is the process wasn't fair. You, NFL, did certain things that deprived us of a fair hearing. In Deflategate, it was, you know, that the Wells report was not independent for various reasons and that they couldn't cross-examine certain witnesses. And the court said, look, that's a decision left to the arbitrator, and we're not going to disturb that. And I think under labor law, the Second Circuit got it right.
Okay. And you just brought up the other case I want to talk about, which is the Ezekiel Elliott case. And that, as we're recording this, yesterday they announced that he's able to play week one. I guess it's because of the timing of everything, but he would still be suspended for the 6 games. Now, he was I don't know what the wording is. He got off. Right? Like, he's not getting punished. He's not serving any jail time. But then the NFL, you know, I could understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, I could understand the NFL coming out and saying, listen, you're behaving poorly. You're making a mockery of the NFL and of your franchise. And for that, we want you to sit out games. And I would say, you know what? They have the right to do that. They are part of this organization. They created some rules. The NFLPA agreed to those rules. But, and what I understand, and again, this could be completely wrong because the media could be spinning it, is that the NFL is basically saying he's guilty. But I didn't know the NFL was a court of law in that sense. So, you know, talk to us about this case, and do you think that the NFL is overstepping their boundaries with these decisions?
First, I do not think the NFL has overstepped its boundaries in any way, shape, or form. And I think the Elliott case is fascinating because I think the union really made some aggressive moves here. So whether Elliott's convicted in a court of law criminally has no bearing on whether he can be disciplined by his employer. And that flows in any context of employment law. The burden of proof in a criminal court is beyond a reasonable doubt, which is extraordinarily high. That is not the burden of proof in an arbitration or to discipline an employee. So what the NFL is saying is, we think you engaged in this conduct. That's not the same as proving to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt and a prosecutor deciding whether or not to take a case to court. Two extraordinarily different things. So when, you know, the NFLPA, the union, saying he wasn't charged with a crime, I think that argument's a throwaway. The reason that Elliott is able to play in the first week is because there was a hearing yesterday in front of the United States District Court judge in Texas. And the judge said, look, NFL, I need further briefing on this. Are you fine with letting him play? And the NFL probably correctly read the tea leaves that the judge was saying, look, if I'm going to rule one way, you need to let this guy play for a week so there's no damage. And they agreed in court that he could play the 1 week. The judge will probably rule on this issue in federal court now before week two. And what the NFLPA did here was they filed a petition to vacate the arbitration award. That's the technical meaning. Basically, they're saying, dear federal judge, throw this thing out, before the award was ever even issued. So there was no arbitration decision, right? They went right into federal court and said, look, the whole process here was completely unfair. So it doesn't matter what the decision is. It was totally unfair. And I read their papers carefully. It's Deflategate 2.0.
Okay.
They're arguing about decisions from the arbitrator. They're arguing about factual determinations that they think the arbitrator would make, and they're dressing it up as this what they call grand conspiracy to deprive Elliott of a fair hearing. I do not think that it is a good position for the union to be in. And correctly, the National Football League responded and has said, look, judge, we've been through this already. It's the Brady case, and it made clear that the arbitrator's power under Article 46. And oh yeah, by the way, judge, there hasn't even been a decision yet. Now, the decision came down, you know, last night. But I think the NFLPA, the union's in a bad spot on this one.
Does the NFLPA or does Ezekiel Elliott's team, do they have more options of taking this to another level? And
yeah. So
like bypassing another year, like didn't Brady, he got away, you know, not get away, but like it took a year to finally say you are suspended the four games or whatever it ended up being.
So what happened in Brady was the district court judge vacated the suspension, so Brady was free, you know, free and clear at that point. The NFL appealed to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. Here, if the federal judge rules, let's say in the union's favor, then Elliott will be free to play and guaranteed that the NFL is going to appeal this to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. That's another appellate court. And vice versa, if the NFLPA loses, they're going to take an appeal to the Fifth Circuit, and they'll ask the appellate court to stay the suspension pending resolution, which they likely will do. The only way that this thing doesn't keep going is if the appellate court goes in favor of the NFL. And if they do that, then the case is over. But I think what the NFLPA is hoping for is they've got a friendlier court in the Fifth Circuit. And that's very important. The reason that they filed first is not because they think there was a grand conspiracy, although that's what's in their papers. They filed first because they didn't want to be in New York, because New York, that Second Circuit Court of Appeals, is very business friendly. If you remember in Deflategate, there was a rush to the courthouse. The NFL filed first in New York. The union filed in Minnesota. Now, why'd they file in Minnesota? Well, they've won there before. See the Adrian Peterson case.
Yeah.
But because they got there second under what's called the first to file rule, the case was heard in New York. And if you look at the NFL's pleadings in this Elliott case, the first thing they come out with right out of the box is the reason that they did this, judge, was because they want to be in a Texas court. They don't want to be in New York where the arbitration happened, and they're trying to avoid that. So what the NFLPA wants is a decision from the Court of Appeal, the Fifth Circuit, that says, no, NFL, you overstepped your bounds. This wasn't a fair hearing. Article 46 doesn't let you abuse what we call due process, right? We've all heard of due process. And then you've got two federal courts that are in conflict on a very important labor law point. You're going to the U.S. Supreme Court in that case. And that's what the NFLPA wants.
Wow.
They want the U.S. Supreme Court to decide the issue of, can, even when you grant power to an employer to hear and decide disciplinary matters, are you giving that employer carte blanche to conduct hearings in any manner they want and to essentially, you know, violate due process? It's very interesting labor law.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. And we're going to have to have you back on when this Ezekiel Elliott case finally gets resolved, if it ever does. And then, you know, by then I'm sure we'll have another court case within the NFL on another player to talk about, right?
I mean, this is all, by the way, just a subscript to the collective bargaining negotiations that are going to happen in 2021.
Right.
That's what's really going on here.
Well, and that's a lot of things we talk about is that the Players Association gave the power to the NFL. That was part of the negotiating, right? They got certain things and the NFL got certain things. And they have to deal with it.
100% true. And Article 46, by the way, has been around for a long time, I think. I just think now it's coming to the forefront because the NFL's using it to impose stricter discipline, and Roger Goodell's been a lot more aggressive about it with very high-profile players. Now,
right.
If you want to look at it from a public relations side, that's a totally different discussion. I look at it from strictly the labor law side.
Right. That's your unique perspective around it. But then, you know, we see players that they bring with them this drama. And I think that we can compare it well to an article that we wrote on our content platform, Sportsypreneur. And we wrote that article, Think Strategically About Your Employees. And it was the example of Odell Beckham Jr. And we discussed how the Giants have to think carefully about Beckham Jr. But, you know, he's an amazing talent. There's a few attitude issues, but, you know, come along with him. But he hasn't had off the field issues as many other players that we've discussed or, you know, players we haven't discussed. But he's had some questionable decisions. I think the boat picture before the playoff game was a little bit questionable, right? And they ended up losing
indeed.
The game. Yeah. But indeed. As an attorney, like, I mean, maybe this is like an obvious answer in many ways, but when the NFL teams are considering taking or, you know, picking up a player with multiple on or off the field issues, like, what should they be thinking about? Because look at what this is doing to the Cowboys. I mean, this is just dragging them through the mud. And Jerry Jones is getting asked this question. The quarterback's getting asked this question all the time. It's like, this is a distraction one way or the other. Like, it's just no two ways about it. So what do you advise your employers to think about? What should the NFL teams be thinking about when it comes to these players?
Well, first of all, I read the article, by the way, which was great. And I think when you're talking about talent, from a regular employer standpoint, I hate to use a broad brush and, you know, speak in absolute terms, like no talent is worth the destruction of your culture, but I don't think that's realistic. I think it's case-by-case basis. I think that's tried and true for regular employers, and I think it's true for sports teams. I mean, look, I hate to use the Patriots as an example, but for some reason they seem to be able to bring in problem children and corral them in a way and keep the drama to a minimum. I mean, see Randy Moss, Corey Dillon. I mean, the list sort of goes on and on.
LeGarrette Blount, right? I'm sure he'll be on your team at the end of this year, guaranteed to lead you to another Super Bowl.
I mean, I think that speaks to your culture, right? If your culture can withstand somebody who maybe has some issues, because if your culture is strong enough and they've got the talent, then you can really complement each other well. So I think with NFL teams, I mean, the concern is exactly what you have in Dallas, which is now every question of those players is about Ezekiel Elliott. Every question is, you know, what happened, particularly because it's domestic violence. I mean, we didn't see that with Brady as much. First of all, Brady was pretty squeaky clean, and it was football, inflating footballs. That's not, even if he did do it, that is not the cardinal sin in the world here. It had a lot of people saying, really, football inflation?
Right.
But with Elliott, we're talking about domestic violence. That's a whole different story. So,
right. And they already have a black eye on that, you know, with the Ray Rice and Greg Hardy stuff. Yep.
That's right. And Dallas has an issue with Greg Hardy. I mean, they brought Greg Hardy back.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes you have to tread a little carefully, and it's all about your culture. I'm not sure where the Cowboys' culture stands. And if they can withstand this, I guess we're going to find out this season.
We'll find out, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the drama. That's the ongoing, you know, these court cases are like the NFL's in the news every second. you know, we see the NBA with these trades, and you know, part of me is like, the NBA is doing this stuff on purpose. They're playing this out in the headlines because it's amazing. It's amazing to watch. It's amazing to listen to and think about. And it just drives more people. All it is their content is driving more people to talk and read and then watch the games and buy the products. That's all this is, right?
Yeah, it's all about attention.
Yeah, yeah. So now hopping a little bit back over to business, and you've already talked about fear. You know, I think a lot of these NFL teams fear the wrong player and destroying their culture. You know, you talk a lot about fear in, you know, getting ready for a court case and being up at 3 a.m. and you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on. But if we were to dig even a little bit deeper into that, as far as you personally, sure, with your business life, what is your biggest fear?
Not being relevant, definitely, especially in the modern world, for sure. It's waking up one day and, you know, it's all passed you by. And you're just not the go-to person anymore, or you don't even know how to get to be the go-to person. So I work really hard to try to stay up to date on anything and everything in business in general, so that I can grow my business, really be a valuable service to my clients in a more efficient, more economical way, so that, you know, I stay relevant.
Yeah.
No, and that's hard.
It is hard.
It's not easy.
It is. And what I think is great is with your podcast, and you guys are talking about sports, and you do a little sports and labor law, and you come on a podcast like this, and you're encouraging your company to try new things and be, we've used the word progressive, and to try, you know, to do that. I think that's a big deal. And yeah, some of that might not have to do with law, right? That has to do with the Patriots or sports, but that's unique. Right. It's genuine. It's who you are. And I can listen to you and be like, I like this guy. I'm running a company. I want him to represent us when we have these issues, because this is someone that I can understand and get along with. And I think you stay relevant in those ways. And I think a lot of business owners who aren't doing that yet understand that's the direction this is going, but it's hard to get yourself in that frame of mind. So like, sure, when you're thinking about, let's do a podcast, how does that come to be? Because some people are probably telling you, what are you talking about? You're crazy. Like, what is a podcast going to do for you? You know, what, it might be fun, but how's that going to help your business and all those different things? You're wasting time with it. Like, how do you overcome the naysayers to then say, no, I'm doing this, and we're going to make this thing happen, and I'm going to get on Eric's podcast with Cat Source and all these different things and get on Anchor. You know, how do you overcome the naysayers and then just get on with it and go do what you are doing?
Oh, I mean, if there's naysayers, I don't listen. I didn't ask anyone anyway. I just sort of told my buddy, we go to a spring training game every year annually, and I've been listening to a lot of podcasts. So we were arguing about sports in the car. You know, he hates Brady. We were having this debate about Brady, and I was, you know, just throwing number after number at him. And, you know, he's kind of shaking his head. I was like, you know what? We should do a podcast. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah, let's just go buy some equipment and do one. He's like, what? What do you mean? I'm like, yeah, how hard could it be? And literally, that's how it came about.
Yeah.
Because I listened to podcasts, and I was like, I could do that. I talk to juries. I do I talk to arbitrators and judges all the time. How hard would it be to talk into a microphone? And that's how it came up. And I had a few naysayers maybe when we first did it. People were like, oh, you know, they'd make little snide remarks like, oh, Mr. Podcaster, stuff like that. But I don't care about those people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how it came to be. And I just sort of did it without really thinking. And that shows, by the way, if you listen to the first episode, it's quite clear there was no thought, because it's terrible. And then we fixed it. We took critiques from people, and I learned how to cut audio and, you know, all the stuff, editing, and it went great. And I'm lucky enough that I have a law firm that supports me, and obviously my dog.
Right.
A law firm that is willing to hear out my ideas and willing to implement them and supports me doing the podcast. I mean, there are a lot of law firms, I think, that might have pulled me into an office. I mean, I'm a partner, but they still might have said, hey, we need you to slow down on that.
Right.
Because, you know, what you do reflects on us. And I work at a place where they're very, very, very comfortable and very progressive with that.
So no, I think that's awesome. And you know, and I could say just from my perspective, because we do look for these things. So we have to hire a CPA. We have to hire an attorney. We have to hire a liability insurance agent. Like, we're insurance, but we don't do the liability side of things. So how do we decide who we work with? I guarantee you, when we hear something come from you and you have this unique approach to it, we take that into consideration, and chances are that's the type of person we want to work with. Or even better, you don't have time for everybody, right? And so let's say I did listen to you and I didn't like it. Well, that saves you, the person that's creating the content, time, because we were never going to get along anyway if I didn't like what you had to say. So you got to avoid that. So in many respects, it can help you on the other side as well. And so I would encourage anyone to be creating content. Obviously, we help companies create content and put themselves out there. We know it's not easy, but at the same time, it's like, you're a case in point, right? Here you are, a labor attorney, and you're creating different types of content and are going to secure clients and new relationships and connections as a result of the work that you're doing in that area.
Yeah, and it's really rewarding. I mean, and that's the best part about it is, you know, even if I didn't meet anyone from it, which I've met plenty of people, you included, it still is fun. And I think that's the most important thing, is do stuff that you like, that you think is fun.
Well, that's it. And, so that's that. What's the worst case scenario of you creating content? You had fun. Or, you know, people that you know got to listen to it, friends or kids or whoever that might be. So I think that's great. Don't go anywhere, because we are going into some rapid fire questions right after this message. We would like to take a quick moment to tell you about an organization we work closely with called RODS, which stands for Racing for Orphans with Down Syndrome. We are a proud supporter of RODS Racing. The RODS mission is to nurture a positive image of Down Syndrome, to promote awareness for the adoption of orphans with Down Syndrome, and by participating in organized athletic races and awareness events. Ultimately, the goal is to find homes for all orphans with Down syndrome. Because of our relationship with the founder of RODS, Brady Murray, we are honored to be able to contribute our work in the area of marketing to create even more awareness around RODS and their mission. You can learn more about RODS at RODS.org. Well, that ends the more thoughtful question approach, and we're going to move to the rapid fire round now.
All right.
So we're gonna go quick. You're the goalie. I'm gonna shoot pucks at you one after the other. A few might be more difficult, so take your time. But you ready to get going?
I'm ready.
All right, cool. What book are you reading right now?
Ready Player One, and I'm reading it on my iPad.
On through the Kindle app, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. What is your favorite social media network and why?
Definitely Instagram. Probably because of the DM feature. And also, I think you can get very creative with it, and I like seeing what other people are doing.
Are you meeting people through the DM feature?
Here and there, yeah. Okay. It's not as I'm not quite great at it yet, but I'm getting better.
It takes time, just like anything else, right? You have to give it time and then be patient.
Yes, absolutely.
What social media app has you the most confused?
Definitely Twitter.
Twitter.
I can't get any foot traffic on Twitter at all. Probably because I'm not using it right, and so I probably need to post more.
Twitter is confusing. There's a lot of news, right? Like the Ezekiel Elliott stuff comes through. That's immediate, right? You can see people's responses to it. So I think in that sense, it's easy. But in the other sense, you're right. I mean, it's a fire hose of information right now, and they have to fix it. Or, you know, I think more, I'm just guessing here, but, you know, they're definitely an option to be bought out. You get some big company that wants to take Twitter's, you know, the idea of Twitter, I think, is going to work. It's just, how does it work? But I also think you can use other platforms and then take the conversation to Twitter. For example, you and I meet on Anchor, we exchange Twitter information, and then we can carry a conversation within Twitter.
That's a very good point.
I think that is a way that it works well, because it's more of that showing up and just having a conversation, and you can jump into any conversation you want and without it being rude. Normally, if I see you at the bar and you're talking to someone else and we've never met, and I walk in and start chatting, you're going to be like, who is this guy, right?
That's a really good analogy, actually. Very good analogy.
Yeah, good. So we can talk more offline about Twitter, but yeah, I mean, you're right. Twitter's definitely has some issues with it, but it's got some possibilities too. So what phone app is most important to you?
Definitely probably Facebook Messenger. I use that a lot. So
is that how you communicate with friends, or is that, you know, people in business?
I actually do a lot of business communicating through it, which I know people find to be a little odd, but for me, it's really worked out well. And I think it's a great, great app for keeping in contact. So
I think that's awesome.
Yeah. I've had good results with it.
Good. So what is the one thing you would tell an up-and-coming entrepreneur to focus on?
Be genuine. Don't try to be somebody else. I mean, it's hard, I guess, maybe sometimes to find out who you are, but I think make that part of your entrepreneurial journey, right? Show people that you're, you know, learning and growing, but make sure that you stay true to yourself and don't listen to the naysayers.
Yeah, oh, I like that. So what's a quick personal story that got you where you are today?
Probably, you know, when I was with the group that I'm working with now at Bryant Miller Olive, I was their law clerk / associate for 2 years. And then I jumped and opened my own firm and left everybody. And then I came back we were all reunited from 2002 until 2012. So 10 years later. So I don't think I'd be where I am if I hadn't met this original group of lawyers that I work with now, who were essentially my mentors, and stayed in touch with them.
Yeah. It's amazing how things can just like that, right? And here you are, yeah, 10 years or many years later doing this. Well, very cool.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
All right, so I got to hit you with it. Tom Brady, is he the greatest quarterback of all time?
I mean, is that even a question? is that a real question?
It's a real question. It's a follow-up. If the answer is yes, yeah, I have a follow-up question for you.
Okay, I mean, yeah, 100%. I just don't even see how it could be argued any other way, but there stranger things have happened.
And you are the leading member of the Tom Brady fan club, is that right?
Well, I think I'm disqualified from being the leading member because I agree with the decision in Deflategate from the Court of Appeal.
There you go. So you lost your seat. Yeah.
But I'm a pretty big fan of Brady and what he's done and the way that he's done it, and the entire Patriots organization. I guess more thankful they took away a lot of misery from being a Patriot fan.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so Brady's number one. Then who's number two?
Montana, for
okay.
sure.
Okay. I thought you were gonna say Marino.
No, I wouldn't say Marino because for whatever reason, Montana, I think, was a better at the end of games, mm-hmm, better at leading teams back, and I really would have loved to have seen what Montana would have done with the rules today. I think it would have been extraordinary.
Yeah.
I've never been a huge Marino fan, interestingly.
Yeah, I remember, you know, when the Bills and the Dolphins were the teams of the AFC East, that they always had these battles, right? Those are the two top teams. The Colts were even in the division, and they were a non-factor. The Jets have always been a non-factor, right? And the Patriots, like we already talked about. But it would be a playoff game or a late, you know, November, December game, and Marino would be up there. It'd be 3rd-and-23, freezing, windy, crowds going absolutely crazy, and this guy would drop a 24-yard pass for a first down, and you're like, how does he do it? So, I mean, I would watch this. I didn't see Montana as much. We saw Montana at the end of his career, you know, when he was with Kansas City. But, like, it was just amazing to watch a guy like Dan Marino come out. He's another one, too. I would love to have seen what these new rules and the type of numbers that they could have put up.
I mean, I think he had probably the fastest release of any quarterback ever. I mean, I think it was ridiculously how fast he got the ball out. I would have loved to have seen what Marino would have done if they had ever given him a defense or a running back.
Or a running back, right?
Just one running back.
That's right, yeah.
Just one.
Yeah.
I can't believe he went that long and they never built a defense around him or gave him a running back.
Yeah.
That's astounding to me. And that, by the way, is one of my big knocks on Don Shula, who I understand is one of the greatest ever.
Yep.
But I point him down for that.
Yeah.
And Dolphin fans, you should too.
Yes, right. It's amazing that they never won or, you know, what he got there his rookie year and never got back. I mean, granted, you have teams that you're playing against, like the Bills, who were stacked at the time. You know, so it's tough, right? You know, there's a lot of great players who never won anything. And Marino happens to be one of them, and Chip Kelly happened to be another one. But they never won because of, you know, the talent and the teams they had to go against.
I mean, at least Bill Polian, I'm no Bill Polian fan as a Patriots fan, but Bill Polian, you know, built those Super Bowl Bills teams. I mean, he built around Jim Kelly, but there was that defense for Buffalo was pretty good.
Yep.
Bruce Smith, I think, was on that defense,
if I
remember correctly.
Yeah, Cornelius Bennett.
Cornelius Bennett. And I think that's, you know, look, in the Super Bowl, anything could happen, right? I mean, you're one field goal away from beating the Giants. I mean, that's not, to me, a testament to how well the team was built. If you get to the Super Bowl, the team was built well. Miami never got back.
Right.
Never.
Yeah.
They got beat by the Patriots in 1985 in the Orange Bowl
yeah.
by Tony Eason and Craig James.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously? How does that happen?
I think they just didn't want to play that Bears team, right?
Well, they beat that Bears team that year.
Yeah, that's right. They did. Were they the one? They were the one team.
The one loss. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. I think that's that you got to knock Shula for that a little bit.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. All right. So now let's back it up to the college football world. We talked before, and I know you go to many college football games. Of the places you've been, what's your favorite atmosphere in college football?
Oh, it's definitely Oxford, Mississippi. No doubt about it.
Okay.
Ole Miss, for sure. The Grove. There's nothing better. You got to go.
We're going.
The only thing I would say is if you're looking for the big SEC, Big Ten type of stadium experience, the number one place for that for me was LSU at night.
Yeah.
100%.
Great. That's amazing. I
mean, unbelievable.
Where's a couple other places you've been?
I've been to Gainesville, to the Swamp, more times than I can count. I've been to Doak Campbell, Florida State. I have been to the Horseshoe, Ohio State. I've been to Kentucky. Where else have I been? I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
And I've been to the Iron Bowl in Tuscaloosa.
Awesome. Those are good spots. I'm actually heading up. Ohio State plays Oklahoma when we're recording this coming Saturday, and actually heading up for the Ohio State Oklahoma game in the Horseshoe.
Oh,
so that should be pretty amazing. Yeah, bringing my son. My parents will be there, so it'll be fun.
That's going to be amazing.
So hopefully on one of the next podcasts, we can talk about hopefully things went well. We'll have a good time regardless, you know, but it's always better when your team wins. That's the thing, though, with a movie is you can't be let down at the end. You could be, right, if the movie wasn't as good. The sports, man, if you're truly invested and your heart's into it, it's a 50-50 proposition many times. You might lose and be pretty upset about it.
Yeah. I mean, I just that's true. But you know what? That sort of heartbreak is what makes you human. That's what makes it worth living in a way. I mean,
yeah,
and you can't get that from my perspective. You can't get that from anything else.
Yeah.
You really can't.
No.
And I think Ohio State, by the way, great team this year.
Well, I heard your podcast, so I appreciate you guys picking the Buckeyes to win the Big Ten. I think you picked the Buckeyes, right? At least you said they were. And we'll see. I mean, the Big Ten's gotten better, right? The SEC, for a while, I was just talking to somebody recently, and it was, I remember the New York Times article that came out and said the Big Ten's basically done, and they'll never be better. And they've struggled a couple times, and it's just, you know, things come and go, right? It's just the way. It's like we talked about with the Bills and the Patriots. Remember, there was a time when the Patriots were irrelevant, and now there's a time where the Bills are irrelevant, and that's just the way things happen.
It's very cyclical, and look at the SEC now. There's Alabama and nobody else.
Yeah.
And I was just looking at the top 10. There's nobody besides Alabama.
Yeah.
It's ACC, Big Ten. I mean, look, I think the Big Ten is a great conference. I think the ACC, one of the best.
Yeah.
I still think Alabama's going to win the national championship, but
yep.
– They have the easiest road. The SEC, not very good this year.
Yeah, it's not as good. And a lot of it comes down to, we're talking about Bill Belichick a lot, and you talked about some other great coaches at coaching, right? So the Big Ten realized that they had a lack of coaching, and they said, we need to put money into coaching. And it's not a surprise that they have some of the best coaches in that conference. And the leadership has now taken that conference. Now, I think there's maybe a little bit, they're overrated, and I think that was an issue last year. I think Ohio State was a very good team last year, but they obviously started struggling, and Clemson proved that. If they showed up and played the way they played against Michigan, against a team like Clemson, they weren't going to win. And in fact, they didn't even score. But they realized with Urban Meyer, they're like, you know what? This is what happened. We're going to fix it. And that's it. That's what you got to do.
Speaking of coaching, look what happened to Florida when Urban Meyer left. Mm-hmm. They can't even – I mean, how – I find it odd that the Florida Gators, probably a top 10 or 15 program, cannot find a quarterback. And they haven't had one since Urban Meyer left.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that tell you? And coaching is a huge, huge factor in college football. And the best coaches are in the Big Ten.
Yeah, Florida – I was talking to a Florida Gator fanatic, and you know, he's even saying how they revolutionized offense in many ways two different times, Spurrier and Urban Meyer. And here they are
now.
They can't even get a first down, it seems like.
And
they have all that talent to pick from. I mean, they have their pick of who they want.
And I live in, I mean, I'm not going to call it Gator country, but South Florida. You're either Miami Hurricanes, Florida State, or Florida Gators. And most of my friends are Gator fans. And they are just, they're beside themselves. They just keep saying it over and over again. Like, how is it that Florida doesn't have a quarterback?
Right.
And I agree with them. I think it's amazing, but it goes back to coaching.
Yeah.
It really does. in college football, at least, for sure.
Absolutely. So Alabama's, unfortunately, your pick to win the college football playoff. Who's your pick to win the Super Bowl this year? Is this a question? These are like just the easiest layups ever.
Certainly. I mean, it's the Patriots. I think you know.
Here's the follow-up. Who are you most, as a Patriot fan and as someone who thinks the Patriots will win it, who are you most concerned about in the NFL if you're a Patriot fan?
Well, in the AFC, I'm actually concerned about Kansas City tomorrow night. I think that's going to be a really close game. I do not think New England's going to walk all over them. I think overall in the AFC, the team I really like is Tennessee.
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
Yeah.
I think that they are very, very tough. And I don't think they play New England this year, but if New England sees them in the playoffs, that could be problematic.
Yeah, they're building something. Oakland's another team, right? They lost their quarterback, but you know, it remains to be seen how they rebound from that end of the year.
I think Thursday night you're going to see a very close football game that probably could go either way. I think it's going to take some time for the Patriots offense to learn how to work without Edelman and with now two really fast receivers, Dorsett and Brandon Cooks. Yeah, they're going to stretch the field more, and I think that's going to take a little bit of time to come together. The Patriots are thin on defense, so we'll see.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I can't believe you said tomorrow, and I was like, wait, the NFL season does start. We're obviously recording this on a Wednesday. The NFL season starts tomorrow. It's wild that it's already here.
Yeah. That's why I'm evacuating today, so I can get to my hotel and watch the game tomorrow. Yeah.
Well, good luck, absolutely, you know, with evacuating, and hopefully this hurricane can slow down and not cause a lot of damage like we're seeing out there. It's kind of crazy. Yeah. So before we let you go, I want to ask you for some words of encouragement for the audience, and then follow that up with how people connect with you, whether it's social, email, or phone, or whatever you like.
I think for anybody listening, it's what I said before. Look, be yourself. Be true to the things that you believe in. Certainly listen to constructive criticism, but don't listen to haters. Don't listen to people that are just jealous or envious or who aren't doing anything and are trying to tell you not to do stuff either. Believe in, if you believe in what you're doing, I say keep going for it, because it's going to eventually pay off. Whether it pays off in dollars or it pays off in, you know, internal happiness, those are both two great things. So stay on the path. As far as getting in touch with me, you can find me on Instagram, which is @Melkins1, Twitter, Melkins31175, and you can find my anchor station, Sports and Labor Law, that's the title, and my podcast, Sports Talk with Jeff and Mike, which is on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher.
Excellent. We're going to put all that in the show notes, so if you didn't get all that down, you'll have it in the description. So, Mike, it was great having you on the podcast.
Great.
You bring a great perspective from being an attorney, and you know your interest in sports, even though you are a Patriots fan. We'll let that slide for now, but it was really great having you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciated it.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Mike, it was absolutely awesome having you on this podcast. From the passion Mike brings as a litigator to his love of sports, Mike is a great example of how to make things happen in your field. The perspectives he brings from being a labor law attorney and on this podcast specifically are now perspectives you as a business owner and entrepreneur can use for yourself. And for that, Mike, thank you. And for any business owner or entrepreneur that has labor law needs, I would encourage you to reach out to Mike. If you have questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can contact me on Twitter @Eric_Kaz or with the same name on Instagram, or you can find us on KazSource.com with links to us on the different social networks. Thank you for listening to our KazSource podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. And until next time, we're out of here.
A big thanks to Rods Racing for their support of this podcast and allowing us to contribute to their inspiring cause.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It's a big deal to us. We hope you found value in it. And if you did, we would be incredibly grateful if you gave us a review on iTunes. Remember to subscribe to this podcast and feel free to share it with anyone you know. More than anything, thank you again for listening. We appreciate it.